So last time we did a tour, Base Yosef, the introduction, and we noted that, again, there are three major factors that Poskim have to bring in different, with different weights. There is analysis of the original Makarot, right, of the primary sources, the canon, however you want to define that, right? Definitely Bavli. Possibly Yerushalmi, possibly Midrash, possibly Agadic texts, possibly Zohar, whatever, depending on who you are. But whatever you think is primary, you have to analyze it and figure out what it says. Now, obviously, like I said, one of the reasons I'm not giving you Tavkuf Be'alif is because it's not classic in that sense, because there is no Gemara. The earliest source is itself a late Minhag, late, okay, it's post-Talmudic. The second thing you need to do is precedent, right? Figure out what have people said in the past. And the third is custom. And custom. Now, each of these is complicated. But in one way or another, you have to balance it. And we saw that according to the Beit Yosef, why does he do what he does? And what does he do and why does he do what he does? I got that right. Right? So he said, what does he do? He wrote an encyclopedic commentary on the tour. Why on the tour? Because it's organized in a practical format rather than a comprehensive one is the Rambam, right? The Rambam is organized conceptually beautifully, but practically it has a lot that you don't need to know. You don't need to write a peirush on, you know, halachic peirush on karbanot to live your day-to-day life now. Just don't. Right? The tour is practical. Someone emailed me and noted that the tour also gives extra emphasis to things that people don't know as well, which is also a helpful organizational tool. Just in general, that's one of his goals, right? Is to the things that people don't know, to make sure that they know them. The tour is the Rush's son. The Beit Yosef is a commentary 200 years later in Israel, as opposed to the tour who's in Spain. Rabbi Yaakov Balaturm is the son of the Rush. Beit Yosef, hundreds of years difference. And we saw that according to the Beit Yosef, he paskins almost exclusively based on precedent. As he says himself, he doesn't paskin for the most part basically on the based on the Gemara, because he assumes that even if you have a kasha on the Gemara or a kasha on, you have a problem with the way that earlier poskim paskined. Probably, look, they were smarter than you. So fundamentally, yes, in theory we're paskin like the Gemara, but in practice, when he's actually trying to determine what the halacha is, what the Gemara says, he's not so spending so much time directly assessing what he thinks the Gemara means. Yes? Okay. So he therefore does two things. First, he collects all the poskim. We counted, I think, 31 plus Zohar, right? So 31 that he says uses standardly. Ube miksat mekomot Zohar. His stated goal under normal circumstances is to pick the best of three of the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam. If they don't speak about it, he brings other Rishonim. And if these three happen to be very much outweighed by other poskim, he also poskins like them, especially when the other position isn't, the minhag is in his accordance with the other custom, right? Which is where you start to see the minhag factor creeping in. And then he says, beyond that, if I poskin X, where you live, the minhag is very clearly Y, so then ignore my psak, right? So again, you see that his primarily tool is precedent with a little bit of minhag, but he understands that minhag can sometimes override his preferred model of precedent. Right? That is where we left off in the Beit Yosef. Okay? Ramosha Israelis. The Hagdama of the Darkei Moshe. So as we mentioned, the Darkei Moshe writes the Darkei Moshe because he meant to write a Beit Yosef-like commentary. Beit Yosef writes it, so he doesn't. So he writes an addendum to it. But what does he feel he has to add to the Beit Yosef, and what does that tell us about the way he thinks about Psak, or what his practical toolbox for Psak? You read it? Yes? Someone tell me. What does he say? No, the Ramah, right? The Darkei Moshe, right? What does he, how does he diverge from...
We went on to the Yom Shoshalom.
Okay, did anyone do the Darkei Moshe, or you went straight to the Yom Shoshalom? Okay, fine. So let's start with the Darkei Moshe. Fine. So he says, "Olam, shiviti neged einai divrei hakadmonim." in front of my eyes are always the earlier postcards. Right off the bat, he clearly agrees fundamentally with Beto Save that one of his central factors is going to be previous figures, right? Previous postkim. But he includes in that Divrei HaGemara, right? So he does acknowledge that obviously you have to learn the sugya as well. Divrei HaGemara, V'agonim, Arif, Tosfot, Rambam, V'poskim, Arishonim, Amordechai, Ashiri, Atur, Hema, Acharonim, right? Early and late. Now, we would call these all Rishonim, but for him, some were earlier, some were later. Kehema, Bo'o, Lifnai, V'lifnim. Right? And this is obviously a pun, right? Why is this a pun? Yeah, exactly. Right? They came before, right? Before. And lefnai v'lifnim means?
Before those. Yeah,
so no, lefnai v'lifnim means inside the inside. It means the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? Because, right, lifnim means to go inside. So lefnai v'lifnim means to go all the way inside. But, right, before you read lefnai v'lifnim, you think he's reading lefnai, right? So it's the ones who were earlier, but they made it into the depths of Torah, right? It's a pun. Okay. It's not meant to be funny. It's a pun. He also is rhyming, because that's very classic, to rhyme, to be a good poet. Right? Being a good poet is important.
What does it, what does it have to do with...
Yes, definitely in Hakdamot. They love rhyming. Yes, they love rhyming. And sometimes in Shuvot, they will rhyme for hundreds of lines before they get to the point. Yeah, it's like a dominance thing, right? Like, if I'm smarter than you because not only do I know Torah, but I can rhyme, then...
My favorite thing is...
They're very good at rhyming and very good at very, very, very funny insults. Very harsh, funny insults.
Alphabetization of line by line by line, which I wish would appear more in halacha because it'd be more fun.
Yeah, so
it,
some
it
right,
make it easier to remember.
Right, so in Hagdama you get it, you know, and you get it at the beginning of Tshuva and like the flowery introductions, you'll get all this poetry and insults in poetic insults and stuff like that. You know, part of it is like for fun. Part of it is look, I'm smart, right? Like I can't do this for the life of me, right? You know, I had a roommate who was really good at this. And, you know, at some point when we were in YU, I was editor of Beis Yitzchak, which is like our Torah journal, and he wrote a 4,000-word article on Halos Shem Truma in rhyme. So, like, it was like Lumdish, and the whole article is in rhyme. You know, I can't do that.
It's interesting that they're writing praise on the Umash in a song while David Malik would specifically criticize a Torah song.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun. What's wrong with a little bit of rhyming in poetry? So v'afti heim aposkim shepashtu b'chol agola, right? You can see it's all rhyming. V'zot Torah ha'olah alibi barishona la'orod achar devrayim le'eda la'adat mimana. Right, so those are all allusions to psukim, and right, he says these are the poskim that spread out in the exile, and this is the Torah that I thought of first to paskin to the congregation who cannot be counted, right? I mean, who has counted them, right? It's okay. Vakasher pasach imelifanim dvarim burim bawacherim im migilat starim veru mitoch tshuvah chachamim asher acharem anu nachnu nigrarim. You'll see how many times this rhymes, right? Haskanim vachorim. Right, that was five rhymes. Yes. I paskined things that were clear, and then they came with right secret texts. And I showed me the response of the Chachamim after whom we are dragged, the officers, etc. Kitshuvah, Tarash Varash Bamarik Varivash Marai. Shehema Haorim Magdolim. Now back to rhyming. Hashir Ene Anashimirim, right? Whose the eyes of people they enlighten. Vilibot Anashim Mitir Damatan Mi'irim. And people from their slumber are awakened. And if they were people, we are comparatively donkeys, which is obviously both an allusion to a Gemara and a rhyme. Now this is important. Okay, so first he says, I quote the Rosh and the Rosh and the Marik and the Rivash and the Marai. Fundamentally, until now, does that sound very similar to the Beit Yosef? Fundamentally, methodologically. Yes. But then he says, I also quoted the Mahariwayel Maharil Mahariv Shehim Amorim. Now, is that the same?
No.
Why not?
It's different people.
Okay, so you'll say it's different people. So that's one difference, is that, yes, who are they? They're the late German codifiers of Minhag Ashkenaz. So point one that he adds is that some of the precedents he includes are more Ashkenazi-centric. The second is that people like the Maharil, what do they write? They don't just write halacha, but what do? They record Minhag Ashkenaz. Right? One of their roles is to record Minhag Ashkenaz. Right? So it's not just that he quotes Ashkenazim, it's that the Ramah focuses on books that record lived practice, right?
Versus
not just practice. Right, meaning, so therefore Minhag is much heavier in his factors than the Beit Yosef. And so, A, in terms of precedence, he's invoking Ashkenazi poskim, and he's paying more attention to Sifrei Minhag and not just pure Sifrei Halacha.
I still don't get why those two things aren't the same. If you have a Minhag to do it or something, doesn't mean the Halacha has a strong case to do that thing?
Nope. So, Minhag can mean different things. Sometimes Minhag means a custom with no halachic basis, which its force comes from the fact that it's a minhag. Right?
But there's no halachic basis. How did a minhag come to be in the first place?
It's a minhag. It's a minhag. Like Kabbalat Shabbat. Kabbalat Shabbat is a minhag. Its value is a minhag.
It's
a minhag. The Nihuge Avelut during the 3 weeks. Right? During the Omer. They are minhagim. They're not in the Gemara. They're not halachic. If you do, right, if you violate them, you didn't violate a Doraita, you didn't violate a Derabanan. It's a minhag.
So I understand how a minhag would come around when there's no previous halacha. But when there's a halacha about something, how can there be a minhag that goes the exact opposite?
Okay, so there's two. So like I said, you have to define. We mean minhag. Sometimes we mean minhag. We mean a custom. A non-halachic custom. Sometimes people use minhag and what they really mean is nohag. As Professor Chaim Soloveitchik has it, which is, they don't mean minhag, meaning something that derives its force from the fact that it's a custom, but what they really mean is, what do people do? And what people do may include a practice to follow a particular psak, right? They are accustomed to follow a particular psak. So sometimes when people say minhag Ashkenaz, they don't mean a minhag. What do they mean? That Ashkenazim follow the Ramah, and therefore our practice is to act in a certain way. But what they really mean is that we are accustomed to following a psak. But they'll use the same word, minhag, but they're totally different. Conceptually, they're completely different.
So one's a much higher level than the other.
Yes and no.
So how is this?
Right? Yes and no. Which is stronger?
Well, I would say this. If you are in a situation where you have a minhag and a nohag, and they're both in conflict, you should follow the nohag, not the minhag.
I don't mean when they're in conflict. Right? Which of those two minhagim is stronger?
I believe the actual minhag.
Right, so this is where it's complicated. On the one hand, the actual minhag has a weakness and a strength. What's its strength?
That it has generations to back it up.
Meaning, right, its strength is you can't challenge it on a textual basis because
there is none.
It's what gives its force is the fact that people do it. So if people do it, it is a minhag. Right? And assuming you treat it as binding because it is. Right? On the other hand, it is not halacha, right? It's just not, right? Which puts it at a lower level. The minhag, let's say, to follow the Ramah, on the one hand, the content of what you're doing is halacha. But because the content is halacha, so on the one hand, it's stronger, but the other hand, it's weaker in the sense that
you violate halacha.
Well, that makes it stronger. What makes it weaker?
Don't violate halacha. You're allowed to not follow it.
If what? It's halacha.
If it's halacha, you have to follow it.
So why am I saying it's weaker?
Oh, halacha is weaker?
Yes. If I said, why is it weaker to say that the minhag that follow the Ramah? In what sense is that weaker? Very good. Right? Because just because you have a minhag to follow the Ramah, what if a posek comes and says, look, I'm Ashkenazi, quote unquote, which we can get to later in the year, whatever that means, right? But I really, really, really think the Ramah is wrong. I really think that Rabbi Yosef Karo is right. And I'm going to pass on like Shulchan Aruch. Is he allowed to do that? In principle, yes, right?
I feel like
Because you're in, right? Because if it's a halachic argument, just the fact that the Ramah says it, so it gives it a lot of weight, but it's not. Right? It has that weakness that you're answerable now, theoretically, to the text, and therefore, there are things that the Ramah does that, you know, standard, quote unquote, Ashkenazim don't follow. Right? Plenty of things.
Don't you have to do something special with your minhag, though?
Maybe. Depends on the type of minhag. Right? In that sense, minhagim are stronger than this type of minhag. Right? Because a minhag, you accepted me to neder. Whereas the acceptance of a certain psak, you accepted because you thought it was right. But if you think it's wrong, you didn't accept it because you thought, right? You didn't accept it as a minhag. You accepted it because you thought that was the halacha. But if it turns out that you don't think that's the halacha, so then, right? So it's, right? So it's, that's what I'm saying. It's weaker and stronger, right? The content is stronger, but there's a mechanism there that more easily allows you to change it, which is paskin differently. Okay?
So here's talking about minhag based off of halacha.
So here he's actually talking about both. Both. And he says, Baharbeis yagot, uminagot machmirim. That in many fences, uminagot, they are more machmir. Vayideze, divrei alpia kadmurim ayushvurim. Menachshafti im chaveirei kebo arim, velo ayali tachvulali hinatzel, biyun goldrem shachu kime etzel leetzel. Right, so because of this, I was broken. And I thought with my friends who are like fire, and I had no plan to be saved, looking at the world, which is it's hard, and sometimes I'm lazy, and it keeps going, right? Okay. So if you look at the next paragraph, again, he says, "Hasheni shelo sasi." So, what did I add? Al dvarav kama v'kam. I added a lot. Uforatzi negba v'yama v'divrei v'shem v'acharonim alo le'elokim bechonim v'chachma shachante yaramayim nivonim uvein shulei mi'ilav tlitei apamonim talitei apamonim. Would you like to maybe explain every poetic reference?
No.
Okay, fine. So I won't. So he says, but what did I add next line? And he says, and even though I am, right, he said, Aldi Rosh Lashur and Zabla Aryeh, but Old Kadav Yarbe Chuvot Gaonim, Chuvot Achronim, Kitum Ari Wild, there is a Rehatar Arosh, and Lo Yichazvu Meimav, Chaber Beit Yosef, Lerim Yamav. So another thing I added were people like Mari Wild that the Beit Yosef can see, right? He says, so what, one reason I added it is because I follow his Minhag, and the second reason is because Beit Yosef didn't see them. Didn't know them. These are late Ashkenazi works, which hadn't made it to the Beit Yosef. They're written not so much before him. And then he says, and the third reason that I wrote the Darkei Moshe, actually, Shid v'hu Ikar, this is the main reason. Hu atachlita mavukash bazeh mechkar. Ki adua sharam yichab Beit Yosef, bitivol gdilim nichsab. Right? The Beit Yosef, by his nature, follows the Gedoilim. And that's what he said. Ufasak halacha, and he always paskins based on two or three witnesses, which is obviously a pasuk, right? Yes?
Yes.
Yes? We knew that? Yes? Hey, mahago nima nechmadim. And they are, admittedly, wonderful people. And that's what he says. Geonim, wonderful geniuses. And who are they? Harif HaRambam VaHarash. So whenever two paskin, and therefore, what does he do? Other poskin? He doesn't care. Rock makom gedolim amad lifsok alachag devishnehem. Va'afim im kamay v'lo batrav lochas the bim shetavchu bo kamay de kamay v'lo rifsha pasuk sof. Right, but he says that's not how I paskin because I have another difference with him, and that is we both agree you should look at early poskim. I care about minhag and I care about sources he didn't care about, but there's another big difference, is that. Who do you give more precedent to? Early poskim or late poskim?
Early poskim.
So the Beis Yosef gives it to early poskim. The Ramah gives it to late poskim. He says, Alo Ariv should pasak, because the halach, he says, Viskimu yiro rabin levsok alachak, because many poskim thought the rule is, Bechol makom kibatrai. Halachak kibatrai. The psak is like the later poskim. Why? There are many reasons. One of the suggestions given,
that more relevant.
So they might be more relevant. They also have the advantage of hindsight, right? Is that they saw everybody, right? They're poskening not by themselves, right? The Rambam didn't have the advantage of seeing 300 years of Pesach after him that looked back and saw, well, what does the consensus say? He may not have cared, but he also doesn't have that advantage. And he said that is the Ashkenazi way, Maharik, Maharai, etc. And then in the last paragraph, he notes, and by the way, just know the Beis Yosef isn't consistent. So Shah. Right? He just parenthetically is like, just know the Beis Yosef's rule. He breaks it when he feels like it. Just so you should know. Okay? But fundamentally, so let's review that. What does the Darkei Moshe agree with and what does he disagree with? Okay? So, in terms of our three factors, is the Rama primarily a Sugya Posek? No, he's not. Right? He's also very much influenced by precedent, right? But he diverges in several ways from the Beit Yosef. One is that he weights precedent towards the Ashkenazi we've shown him. Right? One difference. Second difference is that within precedent, he gives more weight to later poskim rather than early poskim. And third is he gives weight to minhag. Ashkenaz, and again, for the moment, I'm going to not get into what an Ashkenazi is and what Ashkenaz means and who he was poskening for, because this is a mild nightmare, right? This is a machloka that is as old as the Rama. Ad kedei kach, that the Rama wrote, there's a sefer written, Vikuach Mayim Chayim, against the Rama, in the time of the Rama, right? But it's not primarily against the Rama, it's against the evil, evil.
Evil.
Who? Nope. Nope. Printers. The evil printers. And he notes that if you look at the early version of the Rama, the original version, it says that it's recording Liminhag Polin. Where's the Rama live? Poland. In Krakow.
Well, hang on.
And what did the printers add in the second versions? Liminhag Polin v'Ashkenaz. And he points out, it's the printers trying to sell more books. The Rama didn't mean to basket for Ashkenaz. How dare you? You're not basketing for Germany. You're basketing for Poland. And the Rama knew it. But those printers. I kid you not. This is amazing. Book written on this. Entire book.
The modern, what we call the Ashkenaz, like for instance, the Ashkenaz Sidur. If you were to go to a bookstore 100 years ago, if you were to ask for a Sidur and it was like Ashkenaz, they would say, do you want Yeki or do you want Polin? Because
correct.
Up until about 100 years ago, they were separate. And the Ashkenaz that we have today is more similar to the Polin than it was to the Yeki.
And when people talk Rama and Ashkenaz, they don't really mean, right? So So what Ashkenaz is, I want to bracket. But fundamentally, right, so again, the Rama agrees with the Beis Yosef in certain very critical points. A, he's in favor of codification as a methodology, right, of presenting Pesach, right? That was very clear. He wanted to write his own, right? He agrees that much weight should be given to precedent, but he does balance it out, A, more with Minhag. He changes which authorities he includes, and he gives more weight to later poskim than to early poskim. So he does, because they tend to overlap, right? Because Ashkenazi practice tended to follow the later Ashkenazi poskim who recorded Ashkenazi Minhag. So every time you see him say he's poskim like the Maharil, right, the Maharil probably checks all three boxes. So the Rama is always, I can't say always, but is the Rama pretty consistent that he cares about the Maharil and the Maharivayel and those people? Yes. Right, yes. Those people, so when you see those seven Svarim, you don't understand how influential they are in terms of quote-unquote Ashkenazi practice, right? Svarim like the Maharil. Right? They're super, super important because when the Rama becomes super important, and the Rama took these Svarim very, 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 very seriously. Okay? And as I said, the basic consensus in the 16th century was that codification was a good idea, that looking at previous poskim was a good idea for determining Pesach, right? okay, they argued about exactly who you include and who you give more weight to and how much weight you give to Minog. But fundamentally, the idea that you should come up with a code based on some sort of consensus, right, either practice consensus or text consensus, that was like, right, Mechaber and Rama both sort of agreed to that more or less. But as I said, there was one figure in the 16th century who said, I am having none of this. I'm having none of this. This is right? Very, very angry. He gets angry about a lot of things, admittedly. And that is Marshal, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is also the cousin of the Rama. There's family feud. You have wonderful letters between them on feuds on all types of things, not just this. You have a very celebrated letter where the Marshal writes a letter to the Rama and he says, I've heard. How dare you? I heard you read philosophy. It's terrible. And the Rama writes, what do you want from my life? I only read it on Shabbos afternoon when everyone else is wasting time. At least I'm doing something productive, right? I don't do it during the week. It's like, it's a very funny back and forth. So they have these conversations. Yes. This is a very, very fun. So the Rama, so Shlomo Luria writes that this is wrong. He says, which of the three factors does he think you should paskin like? You should give the most weight to? The sugya. Right? The sugya. Your analysis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right? Now, just to show that, his sefer, Yom Shal Shlomo, what is it? Yeah, it's a halachic commentary on the Gemara. The Hakdama, in which he describes his methodology, where is it? Yeah, it's the first volume in Bava Kama. It's not like, right, this is not my halachic code. It's my first, the first mesech that I pick up to write my halachic analysis of the Gemara is Bava Kama. So I wrote Hakdama there, right? It's like, even stylistically. Well, this is one of those things you have to know. The way you think about life and the way you think about Psak manifest not just in how you paskin, but how you write and where you write. Right? I read an article years ago, which has really influenced me, by Dr. Aviata Cohen, where he said, like, think about it. You can tell a lot about a posek by, right? If I told you, forget a psak, if I told you that a posek wrote his tshuva in modern Hebrew and published it in block print, meaning, like this type of font, right? And you could access the tshuva online.
Right, well,
no, I'm saying. Or I told you that someone else. Well, not just Benin Halacha. Or if I said someone else published it in Lishna Derabanan, in Rabbinic Hebrew, in Rashi script, and you can only get it, in
print.
In print, right? In two-columned, in two-column books, right? And then I asked you, not necessarily to give me a name, but I asked you which community did each of these poskim come from. Right, you would know that probably the first one comes from a modern Orthodox, a Dati Lumi in Israel background, because, right, he doesn't, right, simply from his style. The fact that he's writing in modern Hebrew, which means that the average layperson in Israel can read his tshuva. Right, and the fact that he puts it online means that his audience is A, someone he believes in to be online, and two, an audience that he endorses them being online. Right, he's not in denial about it. Right, right, and connect, right, etc. Right, you. It could very well be Pinin Alachab. It could be anybody. It could be.
When you were talking about that, I thought you were. I thought you were giving specific examples. I thought you were talking about Pinin Alachab.
Right, so it could be.
That's what Rav Melamed wanted.
Right. No, exactly. So it could be. It could be Rav Melamed. But if I told you, and he sends it out by SMS or WhatsApp, then you'll know. Oh, yeah, he's probably in the Dati Lumi world. But it could be Rav Sherlo. It could be Rav Aviner. It could be Rav Rimon. It could be right. Dati Lumi is religious Zionist.
These keep us.
Whereas, right, and you know this, and so much can be told about what you think, right? So guys, so much of what you think about Psak can be told by how you publish, right? It's not even, and if I told you that it's published online in Hebrew with an English translation, right, then you know, No. No,
you respond in English, never originally in Hebrew.
No, no, but or if it's published with a translation online, let's say, right? Then you know that the person is
probably American.
No, not necessarily, but believes that his audience is American who
can read English.
Who can read both Hebrew and English?
Well, no, who can't necessarily read Hebrew. That's exactly the point, right? Meaning you could have someone who writes, like, you know, who writes in Hebrew, right? Like Rav Asher Weiss is true voter, not usually published in English. He's American and he writes other books in English, but his true voter are not really written in English. Right? Here and there, someone will translate it, but because who's reading his true vote? Or educated Americans who the Hebrew isn't a challenge for them, right? But Pnine Halacha, when he uploads it for free into 7 languages or 12 languages on his website, he tells you, that tells you already that who's his audience. His audience isn't necessarily, it's international, it's not necessarily rabbis, because most rabbis around the world can read simple modern Hebrew, right? But if he's uploading a sophisticated but accessible halachic work online in English, French, Russian, whatever, you know that his, in Spanish, then you know that his audience is also non-Israeli, probably Balabatim, right? So you can tell a lot about the way someone thinks about halacha by how they write, right? And where they publish. So the fact that Yamshel Shlomo writes his theory of halacha in the introduction to his Parish to Bava Kama, you already know. You already know that this is not someone who believes that Psak is the type of, is the purview of your average person on the street. Just not. Right? Because the average person isn't opening that up. A handbook like Shulchan Aruch is for everybody or more people for sure. Right? A complicated, very, very, very dense essay, right? A series of essays on every line in the Gemara that is halakhically relevant that goes on for pages before it gets to a conclusion. Right? That tells you what he thinks Psak is. And I only gave you a few lines here. No, it's many Masechta. Not all of Shas, but many Masechta. Because of all this, I couldn't hold myself back. I couldn't control myself. I needed to write a book. Even though it is endless. Which it really is. If you ever read Yom Shalom, it's endless, right? Because think about it. Every single sugya, he thinks you have to start from zero. You start from the Gemara, you trace it through every Rishon, right? Every commotion is gar. Vizira Chacham. What?
You read this, so do you think that everything that he said, every paragraph that he wrote was necessary?
Oh, I don't know. It's dense and whatever. Mikol Makom Suki Ha'ed. He says it is in emergency. The hirus da'at ha-mechalkim kibu'ar ha-di'ani alom, right? The destruction of knowledge has brought me to this. La'alot pe-sefer, to write this book, v'samti libi latur be-chochma, and I put in my heart, this is from Shlomo HaMelech, to search out wisdom, to v'lachkor achar shorish hanyan, to go after the basics, v'ha'avodah, sometimes it took me a whole week. I sat there with a single comparison. Right? A single svara. Until I worked and found the core. Then I wrote it down. This is my position. To bring every position. Now, at that one moment, does it sound like the Mechaber and the Ramah? Sure, now watch the next words. V'lo nasati panim l'shum mechaber. And I give no preference to anybody. Right? Meaning, I quote everybody to show you I know it, and then I tell you what I think. Right? Here's what everyone says, and it's very, very nice, but this is what I think. No, he's not. He's using them. Obviously, he's in conversation with them. He says, Avsha ador shalafaneinu le'idahi. Merov chushat v'rof yon yadam. This is even though the generation before us, because of their weakness, ain yecholat b'sticham lasig. He said they aren't strong enough to understand. Shegadol achad mecharim yiteh b'dim, you know, because one person will just make mistakes in his imagination. V'sovrim ha'shekadav v'ktav yashan en la'arachav, and he'll make this crazy mistake that what earlier postim said you can't challenge. Right? You understand who he's attacking, right? He's attacking the Rechaber, he's attacking the Ramah, right? They don't explain why. Right? Right? And he says, and anything that comes out of any person's mouth, even if it's beautiful, even if it's gems, afilo hachi omrin ma gavra mi guvrain. What is my response? What's ma gavra mi guvrain? No. Yeah, exactly. Who is this person? How are you different from anybody else? He's like, I don't care who you are. Right? Or as it as you have it very famously in the Shibbol Eleket, Nakdam Shibbol Eleket, which he takes from Tosfot Reid, he says, even if Yoshua ben Nun would come and tell me the halacha was like this, I would ignore him. Okay, Yoshua, who cares? Hello, yesh lanu gam lanu lashon limudim. He said, I also know how to learn. I also know how to learn. I also know how to learn. I also know how to read Gemara. Okay, right? So the so Yahshua Shlomo says, no. Does he care about precedent? Obviously, he cares about precedent. Does he care about minhag? He cares. But what's his primary? Right, what's the primary thing he cares about?
His own logic
in the Gemara. That's what he does. Right? And now, in the 5 minutes we have left, very briefly, okay? And this analysis I got from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. Just 1 second. And he said, listen, for several hundred years, who won? Mechaber Rama, variations on Mechaber Rama. Right? Codification, precedent, minhag, mix those up. The notion that you should go back to the Sugya and that should be the primary mode of psak. Like, you think about it after the Ramah, what do you have? We saw the Nosei Kelim, the Shaf, the Magen Avraham, the Taz. What are they doing? They're all writing commentaries on it, and they're just saying, oh, I disagree here, there, Nikuda, right? Details. But fundamentally, no one challenged it until, more or less, no, the Yom Shlomo was the 16th century. He lost. But when did this become reinvigorated? The Gra. Right? The Gra's methodology is very much like this. Right, the Gra does not care what anybody thinks. Right, the Gra very much goes back to the Sugyot, Vilna Gaon. Right, so talking late 18th century, and the
no,
and then the Olama Yeshivot in Lita, you start to see this emerge again. Right, so poskim later on, let's say in the 19th, 20th century, like the Aruch HaShulchan. Right, the Aruch HaShulchan, even though it's organized al Seder Shulchan Aruch. It's a series of essays that starts from the Gemara, goes to the Rishonim and Paskins. Even the Mishnah Brura, on the Mishnah Brura side, what is he doing?
Going through the
Achronim. But what on the Bir, what's he doing on the Bir Halacha side? He's analyzing the Sugya himself. Now, often not the Gemara directly, sometimes within the Rishonim, but still, it's independent analysis. Now, Rav Moshe noted that one of the problems that comes with Mishnah Brura is that he's essentially accepting the Chumrot of two different methodologies. And then Mishnah Brura, he'll accept the Chumrah of precedent, and in the Bir Halacha, he will very, even though he'll present his analysis, he's very rarely willing to be makil, right, and be lenient against the weight of precedent. But he will introduce new Chumrah, right? Right? So it is a two-pronged Chumrah. No, Mishnah Brura, right? Yamshar Shlomo was in the 16th century, right? But once you have the Olam Yeshivot, poskim do emerge that are more sympathetic to that type of poskening. So that you will find the Aruch HaShulchan. You will find somewhat in the Bir Halacha. It's a little bit more complicated than the Mishnah Berurah and Bir Halacha, but a little bit, right? And then certain modern poskim, like Moshe Feinstein, the Chazon Ish, right, are much more involved in the Sugyot, whereas a modern poskim like Rav Ovadia Yosef cares much more about precedent. And a Hasidish poskim, like let's say the Nitei Gavriel, right, you'll see this around sometimes. Nitei Gavriel is also a modern code written by Rav Zinner, Rav Gavriel Zinner, who's a Papa Chassid. Will give what's their like the biggest weight in those works? Minhag. Right. So these three trends are important to understand, just because right they continue, and just because in the 16th century the weight went to precedent-based poskim and codification and the like. Right. These things change, and people tend to, now again, it's not a science. It's not like one person only cares about the sugya and one only cares about precedent and one only cares about minhag. It's a balance. But how much weight you give to different poskim changes, and different people have different tendencies.
So someone like Rashi, what did he know?
Well, sometimes he was, but depends on the Masechta. So
Navo
Dezara he is.
Okay, what about like the Rambam?
So that's an interesting question. Right, if you ask a Brisker, he'll be like, oh, Svara, right? But if you ask Reb Rabinovich, who wrote Yad Pshuta, or to be fair, you ask the Rambam, much of what he's doing is recording the Mesorah that he has from the Rif,
And from, he's going based off my story. I'm more than
so it depends who you ask, right? Meaning, right, I heard from Rabbi Rabinovich's grandson. Rabinovich wrote a perush on the Rambam called Yad Pshuta. And what I heard b'shem his grandson from him was that he wrote Yad Pshuta because he was tired of basically every brisker saying, ah, there's all the Rishonim, and then, oh, the Rambam is a chiddush. He's like, you're making it out like the Rambam is his outlier. And every single sugya, he says, but no one else said. He said, no, it's just because you don't read the Gonim. And when he goes through and he says, look, what he says makes a lot of sense if you're reading the same Sfarim he is, which is the Rif, Rabbeinu Hananel, and the Gonim. Right? He's just not part of the same tradition. So sometimes, obviously, he has chidushim, but he is also heavily influenced by the traditions that he has. It's just different traditions. Right? So it's, so, right? So not totally clear. Okay? But anyways, that is mostly the introduction I wanted to give you in terms of the three factors that get balanced into Pesach and how people balance them differently. Starting on Sunday, we will start Tavkuf Pebet, which is HaMelech HaKadosh and HaMelech HaMishpat. Do you want me to give you the Makarot now, or is it better if I hold on to you and you take it on Sunday? For Monday, because I don't give show on Sunday, but Monday.
I'm going to be completely honest. Day from now, a lot of guys are not going to show up with them on Monday.
So on Sunday, I will...
On Sunday, they will...
Well, you have to prepare it. Use it to prepare on Sunday.
Yes, right. On Sunday, okay. We